This is LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk on 91.5 The Source. After a week off for Memorial Day, we're back talking Las Vegas sports right here on 91.5 KUNV. I'm Ray Brewer alongside Taylor Byrne, Case Kiefer. We actually have a pretty packed show today. Caton Reinhart leaves UNLV, transfers to USC. We haven't had a chance to give you our opinion and analysis on that. And then last week, Floyd Mayweather Jr., the boxer, agrees to fight Canelo Alvarez. Finally, we have a fight that we want to see for Floyd Mayweather Jr. So a lot to talk about today. But as promised, I was texting Case and Taylor Saturday, kind of talking a little trash. We've been debating whether or not to do an Olympic-style athletic competition, trying to agree on some events. For instance, I played high school soccer and was semi-decent, and so we agreed that probably penalty kick would be bad because I'd likely win.
No, we didn't agree on that.
Oh, we didn't agree on that?
No, I thought PKs were in.
I thought it was in. I was the one person that said you guys have added all the games, and I hadn't had one say, so I wanted to decide what I wanted. I thought I should at least be able to pick one, but then I complained about that, and I don't have anything to put in. So
you weren't in the office when we were like breaking this down. That's the only reason.
Yeah, it's just like when I came in, you guys had like four, and I think they were all like specialties to you, and I was like, well, wait a minute, I didn't get any input on this.
Well, there was a 40-yard dash. It was one.
Yeah, that's not a specialty to anybody.
That's true. Well, I guess maybe it was the 40-yard dash, and you eat. I don't know. I just remember that was kind of how it went.
Well, let me add this little event to the equation. My friend Anthony, who I think, Case, you've met, he before I got married and was domesticated, I hung out with this guy every night, and he's continued to be non-domesticated. He lives on the strip at the Veer, hangs out with a lot of attractive people. His 32nd birthday. So he invites me up for the party. I haven't seen the guy socially in quite some time. So I go up there. They got this like pool deck. It's real cool. A lot of attractive people, food, and they're playing beer pong, which I'm totally against because it's unsanitary, right? You got to drink the beer from the dirty ping pong table. But they talked me into playing. But there was no drinking. There was water in the cups, and there was no drinking at all. So it was just throwing the ping pong ball into the cups. Let me tell you, not to brag, not to boast, not to be too overconfident, but I am absolutely money on getting the ball in those little cups. And I guarantee you that we should add it in because I would dominate. It'd be a victory for Brewer.
I think you probably would.
I'm definitely down for throwing it in. I don't think you'd dominate. I think anyone could win that one.
Maybe I do think it's kind of crapshoot-ish. I'm very much the stereotypical beer pong player. I get better as I drink a little more, and then once I hit a certain point, I'm just terrible.
Because I would think with your height being 6'9".
Well, no, but that's why you put an elbow rule in.
Okay.
Because otherwise, I can literally just reach over and drop it in.
Okay.
I have done that. Like, I go to people's houses, and if they're, like, leaning over, it's like, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea.
But they were saying beginner's luck. I had some thing where, you know, when I throw the knuckleball in the office? I got that baseball. I've got a great knuckleball. I was kind of knuckling it a little bit. And then you guys have heard of the rule where you're allowed to bounce it on the table to get two cups off?
Yeah, but the other person can knock it off.
We can swat it.
One in.
Yeah. That's because you're playing against people who weren't paying attention. You really think you could do that against us?
I'm just saying that my team.
And if we're putting beer pong in, might as well put like flip cup in too. Or bags.
I don't know. Now, what's the difference between beer pong and this cornhole game you guys play?
In size, for one thing, and it's just one hole. You know, beer pong is usually like an extended table.
Okay, but cornhole, you just throw the bing bag in the hole.
Yeah,
essentially?
But it's like 20 feet away.
I mean, not to say that you guys aren't great at that, and I know you've played before, and you might even have the equipment. But it doesn't seem that hard. You throw a ball in a hole.
Awesome. Let's go play for money right now.
Yeah, let's play for...
Do you want to know how much we've taken from our friends?
No, I'm not saying let's play for money, but at least I don't think I'd get destroyed. I mean,
I think
give me
would.
A practice round or two to get acclimated, but I mean...
I'll give you five practice rounds, give you whatever partner. In fact, I'll pair you with... I don't know what's...
See, I didn't know there was a partner affiliated with it.
Well, yeah, you can play one-on-one. But I'm telling you, Case and I will destroy you in pegs.
I mean, literally just standing 20 feet away and tossing it in.
Well, for one, you keep you keep throwing like overhand. It's not overhand. It's underhand.
Well,
you,
whatever
you could
it is.
You could throw.
So
overhand,
it's like pitching in softball, right?
I get no, but yes.
Okay. Don't doubt me. I mean, no, it's like everything that comes up, it's like are young and
you're
athletic.
You're talking about
and
the
hip.
One thing I know I'm good at.
No, I admitted that beer pong is anyone's game, but okay. Bags, you were a big underdog.
Yeah.
Big okay. underdog.
But you guys are a big underdog in the penalty kicks.
Yeah.
Okay. I am for sure.
Okay. Well, LasVegasSun.com.
I always thought the point of this was we were trying to find like athletic things.
That's not athletic?
Like, not like bar games.
Well, okay, well, I'm just saying.
And if we're doing, you know, like I said, if we're doing beer pong, we might as well do
billiards.
Cornhole. Yep, shoot, let's play billiards. Let's play darts. I bet I could beat you guys in darts.
I think I could beat you guys at Papa Shot.
And
that was the one I was going to throw in too. I think I could win that.
And I still
if we
like,
play Papa Shot, I'll make myself a big favorite. That might be my game if that counts as
and
athletic.
I still like the 3-point contest. I would challenge you to Papa Shot.
All right, I want okay. that. That can be my game because if I lose this one, I might just pull myself out of the competition.
Because one of my
I've been
neighbors
playing a lot and I put up some good scores.
When I was a kid,
you've been playing a lot. Where are you playing?
Well,
Papa
when we
Shot?
Went to Chicago, well,
oh,
six
did you go
of us,
upstairs?
Yeah,
at,
yeah. And we played.
What is that place?
Somewhere in Wrigleyville, we played like 7 rounds, and I came in second every single time. But the guy in front of me and me outscored everyone by like 60 every time.
It's actually funny because I played. I'm pretty sure at the same place in Wrigleyville. That Papa Shot during like my brother's bachelor party. I just faced off with the same guy every time and I lost by one or two.
Yeah, that's pretty much
time.
What happened to me. Every single time I'd lose in heartbreaking I'd beat the other four guys, but lose in heartbreaking fashion to our one of our mutual friends.
LasVegasSun.com sports talk. Let's talk sports.
If we have to.
If we have to. Kenton Reinhart, it's been 2 weeks. Says he's leaving UNLV. Feels he will be better utilized at another school, and then a few days later, that other school turns out to be USC. The aftermath, it appears that UNLV feels that they might be better by subtraction. Maybe.
And that's not what they're saying.
Okay.
But
some people argue.
Oh, certainly,
yes.
Yeah. But I think that assumes that Kenton was never going to, like, change how he was. I think you definitely could have reined him in and made him a very valuable asset. But as it is, if he wasn't going to buy in, this is the best for everybody. You know, his quotes to Doug Gottlieb, you know, talking about how it's not that he wants to be a point guard. He wants to be able to pass and do all this combo stuff. And everything that he was saying was just like, you could have done that here. Like, it's just, it doesn't. And saying that it wasn't his dad, it was all his decision, nobody's buying it. This is just a, you know, he had to deny all these rumors at the end of March, which is, you know, part of the reason, you know, there was a lot of reaction to this, a lot of people like throwing him under the bus, really, you know, kind of talking bad about him from the UNLV perspective. And people nationally didn't quite get it because it was, you know, just looks like a kid transferring in, a hometown crowd being like bitter about it. There's some of that. But it's also the fact that the kid made a like Vine video of him shirtless with a helium voice talking about how he's a rebel for life and like shot down all these rumors and all this stuff, like insulting people who were saying that he wasn't 100% committed when we all knew that he wasn't. You know, this didn't come completely out of left field. You know, this was I wasn't necessarily I didn't think this was for sure going to happen this offseason, but I'm not surprised by it either.
Yeah, and just to give everybody the backstory, you know, Kenton Reinhart came in, top 40 recruit,
mm-hmm.
Awesome outside shooter, billed as the next Jimmer Fredette, of course, because he was Caucasian. Turned out he shot way too much. Really, I guess you could argue he didn't really buy into that team concept, but had a lot of potential, and you could see where, you know, there was games when he was awesome.
Yeah.
In the tournament, he was awesome.
Like, he definitely had skill that you would like to be able to build on and, like,
develop.
And, yeah, develop him for the next 3 years. They didn't see it that way. He's, you know, wants to go to the NBA probably after his next season. You know, he's now has to sit out a year, and then we'll play. And it's just the transfer numbers in college basketball are absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
So high because nobody will just buy in and just work through the problems. Like they just as the first, and this isn't, I'm not saying this is specifically Kenton's issue or any of the other. You know, there have been plenty of transfers in the UNLV program, last year, two this year.
Let me give you my theory. I cover a lot of high school basketball, a lot of recruiting, and you're right. The transfer numbers in Division I basketball are just alarming. And I think a lot of it is if you look at the AAU season from, you know, the spring and the summer, where all these elite top 250 guys are going around to all these tournaments put on by shoe companies or whatever, these guys are told by whomever their handlers are that they're going to be in the league, that they're, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread. And, you know, they commit to a school for whatever reasons, and when it doesn't work out, they're like, my whole life I've been told by Bobby, my AAU coach, whose only job is to coach my AAU team, that I'm awesome, and now all of a sudden I'm not awesome. And so I'm going to go find somebody to tell me I'm awesome, and I'm going to play there. And
yeah, because it's not even that it's not like working out. It's that it doesn't work out immediately, or that they're not getting everything they want right away, which is also part of the backlash against Caton. I mean, he was second on the team in shots and minutes. So people are just like, how could you not be happy with that? Which, that's a pretty valid point, I would say. But you're right. It's nobody wants to overcome adversity, or at least they are much more likely to run away from it and go to some place where all of a sudden, you know, people are blowing smoke up there again.
Hold on. Case Kiefer, how many NBA teams are there? 30 or 32?
30.
So there's 30 people each year that are picked in this NBA draft that are guaranteed pro money. Mm-hmm. You got to pay your taxes. You got to do all that. 30 people. Every year, like 90 early entries declare for the draft. All these kids transfer because – not because they want a better college experience or they want to get a – because they want a better opportunity to go pro. I just think that, okay, go ahead. Shoot for the stars. Have your dreams. But – Take some of the responsibility on your shoulders. Be more thorough in the recruiting process. I think a lot of times coaches may be the blame. They may say, hey, Joe Smith, power forward, I see you as a 25-minute double-double guy each game. You're great facing the basket. You're great with your back against the basket. You're the man. And then when all of a sudden you get the guy there, you're like, oh, sorry, I got three other guys in front of you. You're going to be a practice squad guy for a year. We'll get you 5 or 6 minutes and see what happens. And then they're like, oh, I'm done with you, man. I'm going on to the next guy that tells me I'm the next coming of, you know, Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm. No, that's definitely an issue. You know, when anytime you have promises made from either side, then you're like all of a sudden basically locked into that. Otherwise, you're just ruining the, you know, whatever relationship you had built up. You know, I don't know how much that goes on. I think it's actually probably less than people assume. Where coaches are like telling guys that they're going to be like the number one and all this, it definitely happens, but I don't think it's quite as much as people think. I think it's more once they're in the program, things just not feeling quite right, basically.
I was talking to a high school football coach this weekend at a lower tier school in town, and he is one player at a D1 school. And that guy's getting the run around. They've switched him from offense and defense a few times. And the coach is like, well, that school's never going to be able to recruit in my gym again because the coach said that my guy was going to be, you know, set as the tackle, blah, blah, blah. And now, you know, now he's played offense and defense and he just can't get his head straight. And, you know, I'm like, dude, it's there's 85 people on scholarship in Division I football. Every guy, they're not recruiting a guy to say, hey, listen, you're a great backup, and when we're beating Southern Utah, we're going to put you in for a few snaps. Every guy is recruited to be the starter.
Yeah, but not
everybody. You're not told you're going to be a reserve.
Well, no, I think some kids, when coaches are honest, they're telling them, you know, you probably won't play, you know, starters minutes until you're a junior or, you know, sophomore, exactly. Junior. Like, when you're honest about it, I think it's best for both sides, and especially, you know, like the top guys or the top programs, they can just say that because they obviously, you know, in Alabama, kids want to go there no matter what, and they know that, you know, there's like 3-5 stars ahead of them. You got to pay your dues.
Only, and they're always going to recruit over you.
Yeah, and only a couple of guys are going to, like, make that, you know, jump as freshmen or as, you know, sophomores.
Caton Reinhart leaves UNLV to go to USC. Taylor Byrne wrote last week on LasVegasSun.com about how the UNLV lineup will potentially look next year. Ken Birch, my guy, Roscoe Smith. And Roscoe, we trust.
Wait, which one's your guy out of those two?
I love Roscoe. Remember, we've talked about this a thousand times.
He's better than he's going to have a better season than Mike Moser last year, two years ago.
And UNLV.
I would not be shocked.
I can't believe that. There's no way.
I don't think he's gonna have. I mean, Moser was like 14-10. I don't think it's gonna be quite there, but it could be like 15-6.
And how many practices did you watch Roscoe at last year? Hundreds.
Every
practice
one.
And there's games. I've watched the guy in games, and he's just going to all of a sudden become a superstar.
He won a national championship.
He was on a national championship team.
Did he win?
He didn't win a national. Joel Anthony won an NBA Finals championships.
I mean, but Joel Anthony barely played. Roscoe Smith started on a national championship
team. And was like,
team.
What, the fourth option?
Who cares? He was a freshman. Dude, he's good,
now,
bro.
I think he's going to be good, setting him up for second team All-American or bust with the way you're talking.
This is the interesting conversation because I've talked to people who have seen – I didn't really see Roscoe play at UConn. I haven't seen much tape other than the bloopers. So I've talked to people
– Other than the bloopers.
Yeah, no, they're great. Because he has multiple times, like at the end of a shot clock, you know, chucked the ball like three-quarters court, but there was still like 5 seconds left. And so then the team got to inbound it. That happened twice.
I think I've heard someone either remember that or heard someone talk
about
that.
Not top 10 against Texas, yeah.
Yes. So okay. So the people who saw him play at UConn have kind of one opinion of him. The people who have seen him practice have another. And so I think the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere in the middle, which is not second team All-American, which is when I listen to Brewer talk about him, what I think he's going to be.
Second team All-American.
Well, just the way you describe
it. But I think this guy is first team All-League for sure.
I was going to say second team All-League. You know, like that would be the reason. I think the reasonable high expectation is he's one of the top 10-ish players in the league.
Maybe I'm just letting Brewer's boast get to my head.
That's a high ceiling.
I could just be letting you, just being so high on it, get to my head a little bit much. But, like, if this kid doesn't make first-team All-League with the way you've talked about him, I would say it's a disappointment. In your mind, you've made him sound like he's going to be one of the best in the Mountain West right away.
Here's the deal. UNLV last year, and this is a grand scheme of things, so I'm going to take a step back, had some pretty lofty and unrealistic expectations. I wrote about it before the season started. It was like Final Four team, Sweet 16 at least. We've got Anthony Bennett. We've got Kate Reinhart. We've got all these McDonald's guys. Rebels are going to run. They beat Carolina the year before. Totally unrealistic.
Final Four was unrealistic. I don't think the Sweet 16 was unrealistic.
They didn't meet those expectations. Now, all of a sudden, Bennett to the NBA, Moser to Oregon, Reinhart to USC, and who does UNLV have? You can't even name it, right? Okay.
No, that's...
No, but not the McDonald's All-American quarter pounder slammers that they had before.
What are you talking about? Bennett was like the only McDonald's guy last year, and now they've got Kendrick.
Listen.
And wasn't Birch and all McDonald's All-American?
Are they going to be a top 25 team?
No.
Okay. So let's just forget about everything I just said. Last year, top 25 team. This year, not in the top 25. Expectations, not as high. I think they thrive. No pressure. Roscoe Smith, baby, takes them on their shoulders and gets them to where we think they might be able to go.
That's the idea.
That's a great idea, not the idea. A great idea.
No, I mean, that's the idea, that to get the spotlight. They don't purposely get the spotlight off of them, but now that they are more kind of just able to work on their own thing, supposed to be more of the full court press running style, I'll believe it when I see it.
A point guard that's athletic and quick.
So is it going to be a big surprise if, like, Birch...
They had that. You're going to tell me Anthony Marshall wasn't athletic and quick?
No, I agree with you. But Anthony Marshall, and this is going to be...
No, but this is the point. They did need something different at that spot. But saying that now they have someone who's athletic and quick, they already had that.
That's you're right, 100%. Good point. Anthony Marshall, for me, had a great Rebel career. He was more... His first year and second year, when he played like 12 or 15 minutes off the game, came in off the bench and was able to be a guy that would create a steal or maybe, you know, be great on defense. That was more his role, not carry the team on your back for whatever it's
worth. But I think what I felt like when I watched him, and I don't think he's had a bad career at all. I'm not bashing the guy. But when I watched him those freshman and sophomore years, I always thought, like, man, this guy is going to be able to carry the team when he gets older, when he gets better. And I don't know if he necessarily improved as much as I would have expected watching him when he was young.
I just don't think it was in his personality a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know his personality. Just watching, I mean, I loved him when he was a freshman.
A lot of the team's critics, especially my dad, who's a diehard Rebel fan, says that the players just don't develop. That you look at
some... Well, but that's also, you know, Marshall was like 50-50 coaching change. You know, so that's...
Sure.
You know, different expectations from different guys and also different ways of, like, training and developing.
Mm-hmm. And then you bring a good point up. You know, Dave's always had to kind of work with some of Milan's guys, too. And no matter how good everybody meshes, there's always going to be that chemistry mishap, arguably.
Could be, yeah. It's something you always have to fight against. I think you're much – you know, coach would always rather have his own guys. You know, Dave will go out of his way still to, you know, praise Lon and the things that he had done for the program.
Amen.
And
why not?
You know, and absolutely. But, you know, you'd always rather have your guys, the guys that you brought in. But yeah, I think day one it'll be DeVille Smith at the one. Could be Kendrick, but that's he can play the one or the three. Are you dancing to Kendrick Lamar? Is that what's happening right
now? That's my anthem.
Yikes.
I don't think you can name a Kendrick Lamar song.
No, I doubt he can.
Okay.
But if I heard one on the radio and you said it was Kendrick Lamar, I'd be able to get a few words.
You should have come with me to the show. One of the shows of the year.
Oh, with the Cosmo?
Yeah.
Yes.
Told you to come.
Wow.
I'm going to see him upcoming this weekend.
Kendrick Lamar?
Yeah. Out in New York.
The only thing I know is the one line that says, I'm Kendrick Lamar.
And that's not even his song. That's why I said that. That's why I said that you
sings that song?
Well, he's in it.
Everybody does. That's an ASAP Rocky song.
Yeah, but okay. That's why I thought I was setting you up for failure, because I thought you were going to say, oh, I know that song. It's I'm Kendrick Lamar. Yeah. It's not even his song.
That's all I sing in the car every morning. LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk, 91.5 KUNV. Every Tuesday morning, I guess, except for holiday weeks, we're here talking UNLV sports, Las Vegas sports, whatever kind of sports and social life we feel like talking. And last week, Floyd Mayweather, he who bets millions of dollars apparently, agrees to a fight with Canelo Alvarez. Case and I cover boxing, and I think we're both anxious for this one.
I'm pumped. This is the fight I would want to see the most, probably, even though I think Mayweather's going to win. This would be my number one fight that they could make right now. And a lot of people were pessimistic, saying it wasn't going to happen. Good to see. You know, we still don't really know exactly why it came together, but it's good to see that it did. Maybe Floyd really was sick of hearing how he was ducking opponents, or maybe some pressure got put on him by Showtime because the Guerrero fight didn't sell as well as expectations, maybe. I think it speaks to how huge it is, though, is that Top Rank was supposed to compete with Golden Boy that weekend, and as soon as Mayweather announced he was fighting Canelo, they said, okay, we're moving Marquez and Bradley to October.
Yeah, which...
That was smart by them.
No, it was very smart, but right. I think it shows how big of a deal it is, because Bob Arum never wants to back down and wants to compete with him or whatever. And last year, he didn't back down. He ended up getting the better fight because Victor Ortiz broke his jaw and quit. But, like, I don't think he ever would have done that for anyone else, and I think it just speaks to how much of a mega event it is.
And I liked those dual fight nights, actually. I thought there was a lot of buzz in town, and I enjoyed how we were kind of both at each fight and kind of checking up on each other.
Yeah, but if those were the same weekend, this is the biggest fight that could have happened right now. Nobody would want to be at Marquez.
Yeah, I think Arum wouldn't even have canceled it if Mayweather decided he was fighting September 14th and fighting like Devin Alexander. I think Arum would have.
I think that still would have gone.
But they went and got Canelo Alvarez, who behind, I guess, Cesar Chavez Jr. is the biggest draw, the biggest Mexican fighter.
I think he's much bigger than Cesar Chavez Jr.
I mean, this guy's held his own pay per view. Cesar Chavez's only really big pay per view was he had Sergio Martinez too. I mean, Canelo is fighting no one. He's like a 1,400 favorite, and he sold just as many pay-per-views as the Cesar Chavez Jr.
I think Chavez definitely has, like, the boxing fans from Mexico. Canelo, like, kind of this good-looking young kid. I think he's dating, like, a supermodel.
Yeah, I mean, he's, like, the mainstream.
He's beyond just the boxing world.
And I thought Canelo's a great fighter. He's, I think, 42-0-1, and he's still pretty young, maybe 23,
maybe? Does he have that many fights?
Yeah, in Mexico, they start you young and you just fight every day. But I was a little shocked when the lines came out. Floyd's a 270 favorite. I know there's a school of thought that says Canelo hasn't fought anybody, but
I actually thought that was about right.
I thought I was about right. I was one. Did you think I was too high or too low?
I thought it was too high. I thought Floyd would be like a $2 favorite at the most.
But I think Canelo's just, you know, hasn't been tested by a whole lot of people. And what was the last one? The Trout fight? Don't a lot of people think that he lost that?
Yeah, I still haven't watched that, but a lot of people supposedly think he lost to Austin Trout.
You know, so like the one time that he's kind of been really challenged, a lot of people think he didn't even win it. And then you're talking about, like, you know, Canelo needs to connect with that left hook.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about going against the guy who's the best in the world at avoiding punches.
Well, I tell you this, Mexican Independence Day weekend, MGM's going to be crowded with Alvarez fans.
Yeah.
I don't know if that gives him a home court advantage of any sorts, but I think it's definitely one.
What will that crowd be like?
The money team's going to come out in full force, too.
But the money team is just 12 guys he pays.
Not really. All these celebrities that have all this money, they're going to buy all the
Bieber
big tickets. There's all these.
He's not in prison.
I mean, even like all these B-list NBA players and every celebrity up front are all going to be rooting for
him. Yeah, love money.
But in the cheap seats, it's going to be the Mexican flags and the mariachi singing.
And maybe this is the other reason. The last Mayweather fight, all week at the pre-fight festivities, I'd say there are more Guerrero people, surprising as it was, Mexican flags everywhere. Then you got in there on fight night, and it was all Mayweather fans.
Those guys
couldn't
afford
tickets,
probably.
I don't know how the Mayweather fans afforded tickets, but
he probably bought them.
Money bought them and gave them to him. Yeah. I bet there will be more Mayweather fans, but the Canelo fans will be louder and like more into it.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be close.
Do you think Mayweather, who obviously through Twitter we know that he's a huge gambler, would he put $2.7 million on himself to win $1 million?
I'm sure
that's against the law.
It's actually not. You can bet on yourself and sports.
I was actually texting you about this one day
because
I was wondering if somebody, one of his, you know, money team guys, put a bet down, if that was fine. But he can just straight up do it.
Yeah. So if you're a fighter, you can.
But
bet
then
on
he
yourself.
Can just tank, or he.
Well,
can
you
bet
can't.
On,
I don't think you can bet against yourself.
You can't bet. Okay.
But you can bet on yourself. I don't think it's encouraged.
Are you positive
about
that?
I'm 100% positive.
How
I've
is that allowed?
I talked about it with a former Nevada athletic. Commissioners,
that's nuts to me.
Yeah, I mean, if Mayweather was real confident, he should put
Pete Rose is flabbergasted right
20,
now.
Yeah, Pete Rose is like,
you can do what?
And I only first realized this, one of the first boxing cards I covered here, a guy was like a plus 300 underdog. I don't remember who it was now. And after he won, they were all in the locker room holding up their tickets because they all had, like, it wasn't Mayweather-style money, but they had, like, $2,000 on the guy, like, plus 300. He had a ticket. His trainer had a ticket.
Nice. I like that. I like that. I got a great Pete Rose story for you guys next week on LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Yeah, I was briefly, when I was 18 or 19, probably 19, I was the producer of his radio show at MGM.
I was a radio show intern.
Wow. Yeah, it was in the MGM sports book, if you guys catch my drift. LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk, Tuesdays right here on 91.5 The Source. It's part of the Waking Up with the Sun package. Our news gatherers from the Sun talk their beats, politics, arts and entertainment, food, education, whatever it may be, right here on 91.5. For Taylor and Case, I'm Ray. Talk to you next time.